you know, the urine tests that are given at every job. How many people would in their right mind think of that as a job career? But there are many, many jobs that are being used to take away our civil rights that have no basis in reality, and these people are too cowardly to find realistic jobs, and they are actively, the police officers in San Francisco got $1.25 million in overtime pay in June alone.
Yeah, it's amazing. At my hearing, when I was up before the Superior Court Appellate Division on my serve soup go to jail conviction, where I was sentenced to 2 months, and the Superior Court examined that particular court decision, that was in August, there were 29 cops who were out there, and there were more hiding away in back, for a total of 9 demonstrators or observers at the trial. So there's a huge amount of money going into the police industry, into the prison industry, certainly as we know. Let me see if I can get some specifics from you, if you have them. Any more details on the last week or two of Matrix 2? Any thoughts on that or any?
Well, basically it's been a bust. We were aware that this roundup was going to happen, and we actively went out and did outreach to the homeless in Golden Gate Park especially, but we have an effective network of communication with the homeless. And we essentially got them into, I don't want to disclose too many of our options, but we were able to create opportunities for them so that they would not be rousted. So the first night of the Matrix sweep in Golden Gate Park, where before there were hundreds and hundreds of homeless in Golden Gate Park, they actually were only able to find, I've heard two different reports. One was 9 citations, the other was 15. And the mayor says that there are only 90 homeless in all of Golden Gate Park. And we are contending that there are over 500. But in any case, it's really proven to be kind of a bust. The cops have gone out there in a massive formation. We'll see what we can do to get some videos down here to the Santa Cruz community and show the massive sweeps. There are horses, there are motorcycles, there are police cars. And this endless dollar expenditure to we're essentially using up the resources of San Francisco. There's actually one other aspect of San Francisco's problem. As Santa Cruz citizens, you must realize that Santa Cruz has got a budget problem, budget constraints. And you've got problems with your local hospitals. You've got probably local clinics that are being shut down, just as is occurring in San Francisco. Well, there have been studies in San Francisco of the epidemic proportions of tuberculosis, of hepatitis, and as certainly you are aware, the AIDS epidemic. The insurance companies will cut you off of insurance once you're shown to be HIV positive. These are people who have become homeless, whether with HIV, with hepatitis, or with tuberculosis. And San Francisco is virtually the only county with the resources, the financial resources, to be able to deal with these medical crises. The fact that the mayor is going to chase people, a 30% population of tuberculosis, I believe it's about a 15 to 17% population of hepatitis, and an unknown population of people with HIV, he's going to drive these people into the surrounding counties, whether they come down here, whether they're going to stay locally just in Alameda or San Mateo, or whether they're going to go out further back into Tennessee and Florida and Wyoming and some of the other states that they have come from. These are the Republicans and the fiscal conservatives that are supposed to be running this nation. always talk about the private sector and the efficiency. The government is not very efficient. If you've got a known population with 30% tuberculosis, it's much more efficient to do an outreach and to cure that problem before you drive them into the rest of the nation. What we've got here is a forcing, an injecting of these diseases into the rest of the nation with this matrix program. And it's not only not cost effective, but it's actually, I look at it as almost a structural collapse of America. Not only are these people being driven back into other locations, which they're not familiar with, and in a high-stress manner, but these are people who are, it's winter coming on, and these are people with tuberculosis, with hepatitis, and with HIV that are being forced into the rest of the nation with these epidemics. The inefficiency of a community. Everyone in Northern California realizes that that San Francisco is the most prosperous county around. And the fact is that San Francisco is the only county that can afford to cure these problems, as well as the only county that can efficiently deal with it because it's already geared up.
Plus, it's probably the only county that can muster the political will. It's got the most liberal board of supervisors, although that board, I'd like to point out, passed a curfew law within the last month, a somewhat weaker curfew law than that requested by Mayor Juggernaut Jordan, but a curfew law nonetheless. I think to kind of cap this off, I'm going to read this article from the Sentinel for the audience and maybe get any comments you have on this, David. Undaunted, actually before I read it, let me give you our station name and number. You are a Free Radio Santa Cruz listener, if you're listening, and we are at 96.3 FM here in Santa Cruz. To comment on this show, to get on the air yourself, to have me forward your comments to the radio public, give a call to 423-4833 to join in the latest Huff campaign. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the organization I work for, to decriminalize homelessness. Come on down today to the Pacific Garden Mall right next to the Del Mar Theater at Lincoln and Pacific at about 1:30 today. We'll be setting up the Hound Dog the Hosts table, which is the table designed to monitor the hosts program downtown, the hospitality Nazis, as Phil Free calls them, the green-shirted grinners, the paid snitches of the police department that are running around telling people not to sit here, not to play there, essentially acting as an anonymous front behind which certain discontented merchants can intimidate people on the streets from behavior that is innocent and a nuisance at best. A nuisance at best. But again, getting back to the story here, San Francisco will continue rousting homeless. Mayor Jordan wants city parks cleared. This from the September 9th Santa Cruz County Sentinel. San Francisco, undaunted by continued criticism from his mayoral opponents and San Franciscans opposed to a stepped-up matrix program, Mayor Frank Jordan is hanging tough on his intention to clear the homeless from the city's parks and neighborhoods. He has announced that police officers from precincts controlling the Inner Sunset, the Inner Richmond, and the Haight-Ashbury districts would begin rousting homeless people from shop doorways and parks. Jordan, standing at 8th Avenue and Irving Street, said Thursday, Residents feared the effort to clear Golden Gate Park of the homeless would push them into the surrounding neighborhoods. As part of our plan to improve the quality of life, we have stepped up matrix activities in those neighborhoods. Sweeps through Golden Gate Park homeless encampments, which the mayor has dubbed Matrix 2, began 3 weeks ago. Matrix, which began 2 years ago, is the city's crackdown on nuisance crimes, and it is aimed at the homeless. To date, we have identified 77 encampments in Golden Gate Park, Jordan said, resulting in 141 citations and 21 arrests. We have outreach teams in the park offering assistance with city services. Only 78 people offered assistance, or of 78 offered assistance, only 11 showed up later for shelter, Jordan admitted, and that's one of the problems Inner Sunset resident Jerry Ginsburg has with Matrix. The mayor has offered no alternatives for these people, said Ginsburg, a retiree who moved to San Francisco from New York City 5 years ago. I'm an inveterate walker, and I go through the park every day. I've gotten to know these people, and they are no threat to any man, woman, child, or dog. My message to the mayor is it's time for compassion, not punitive political gestures, said Ginsburg, who is supporting Jordan challenger Roberta Actenberg. But Tom Mulvihill, a longtime Golden Gate Heights resident, said he supported the mayor's efforts. This whole problem should have been stopped down on Fell Street, where the homeless set up an encampment in Civic Center 5 years ago. These people are ruining our park, said Mulvihill, 75. Jordan's Matrix program has been criticized by his mayoral opponents as criminalizing the poor. Actenberg, Supervisor Angela Alioto, and Assemblyman Willie Brown have offered homeless plans that emphasize outreach and social service programs rather than police enforcement. It's not illegal for someone to be homeless in San Francisco, Jordan said. Behavior patterns are the issue here. We have to set a tone. We are not going to allow police nuisance violations. Well, the tone in this case is, but that's, I guess, the reality of it. Any comment on that story, David?
Well, I'd also like to add, the mayor, I really do believe that overtime is a major aspect of this. The mayor is also trying to gather alliances financially. He's trying to use the city's money to create. It's a typical campaign scam, whether it was back to Tammany Hall or whether to any other old corrupt politician, Mayor Daley, for example. That the mayor is using the police budget to gather allegiance with people who are going to get jobs related to hurting. And taking away civil rights. It's interesting because these people are not getting high dollars, and there are other aspects of it. In talking to some of these police officers, they get nice chunks of overtime pay for a short amount of time, then they start getting a little crazy with their expenditures. They get deep in debt, they borrow money, credit unions give them loans at low interest rates, or they give them easy loans, and then they starve them for a couple of months without harassment. In other words, they give them low job assignments, so all of a sudden they're on a tight budget again. That makes these cops eager to get the overtime pay, and they're eager to follow orders at any cost.
Now, is this speculation, David, or have you actually heard this from police officers?
Well, I've known this to happen. This is what I was leading up to with the Adolf Hitler. I have heard this from San Francisco police officers. I've heard it from people who used to work at the nuclear weapons testing site in Mercury, Nevada. I've heard it also from people in the construction field, for example, in the Alaska pipeline, in a number of other large construction operations and police and military type operations. It's a very typical way of keeping allegiance. These people don't like what they're doing, but they have to follow orders in order to get, you know, keep those paychecks coming. As I mentioned, in the month of June alone, the San Francisco Police Department got $1.25 million in overtime pay alone.
Where are you getting that statistic from?
That was from the, I believe it was the July 9th, I'd have to look at the calendar again, but I believe it was the July 9th budget hearing at City Hall. It was a grant to pay overtime for the San Francisco Police Department. Yeah, we've got a little blurb in the public records about that.
Well, while I've got you here, you're an active worker with Food Not Bombs. In fact, frequently when I was serving with them in San Francisco, you were a man on video. You and Hugh and others were running around videoing the police harassment of Food Not Bombs, first when they served in front of Civic Center Plaza, in front of the mayor's office, the City Hall, and then now when they're serving at the UN Plaza. I'm not sure how much videoing is going on, but we talked earlier about Food Not Bombs' attempt to secure a food permit. As most of our audience knows, Food Not Bombs is an organization which has been operating in San Francisco since 1987, the winter, and it serves free food to homeless people prepared by low-income people and homeless people themselves in private kitchens based on donations given by grocery stores, completely vegetarian, safe. There has never been a verified health complaint for sickness for Food Not Bombs that I am aware of anywhere in San Francisco or in the country. And many Food Not Bombs organizations have sprung up throughout the nation, including in Santa Cruz. Food Not Bombs has encountered great problems with the bureaucracy in securing what's called a health permit. And my analysis of that situation has been, and I've discussed it on the air, that Food Not Bombs has been essentially the victim of a politically motivated harassment effort for nearly a decade. They got a health permit. It was removed in 1990 in the summer when the Parks and Rec Department declared that any outside serving operation on the public parks would not be given permits. They have not been able to secure health permits since then until this most recent point at which the Food Not Bombs moved to UN Plaza, several blocks from its old feeding place at Civic Center Plaza in San Francisco, which apparently is one of the few places that the Board of Supervisors itself, rather than the Parks and Rec Department, controls, if I understand. I heard that from David earlier. And so they were able to apply for a permit. They applied for a permit, but they were only given a permit for 2 days a week instead of the 7 days a week they serve.
Actually, it's only two meals per week, not 2 days per week. We typically serve 13 meals. And so we're only entitled legally to serve two meals per week. So it's a real mockery. There are some, I've been talking to some of the supervisors about this issue, and they felt that it was a typographical error on their part. They're somewhat embarrassed by it. That they felt that it was a typographical error on their part, that they didn't realize that we wanted to serve two meals per day, and I don't want to get into, you know, name calling and finger pointing about that issue, but it is pretty preposterous to think that the homeless shall legally be entitled to eat twice per week. It's pretty ridiculous. Just in summary, I think that the issue is that the largest amount of the economy has been sent to the financial corrupt. The biggest part of the economy in America has been looted, and America is faced with a problem that the wealthy in America do not care about those that they have left in the dust, and the poverty in America has gotten to such proportions that there is no middle class anymore. In 1989, a number of different governmental statistics, whether the Department of Labor, whether the Department of Commerce, a variety of different statistics, had shown that that it was required that you make $84,000 per year for a family of four to be even considered middle class.
Yeah,
now, in this morning's Sentinel, I believe there's an article.
September 6th Sentinel, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, an editorial by Diana Griego Irwin, and she mentions that the median income is $36,959 per year, and that's actually a decrease from the previous from 1989. There's been a loss of about $2,700. Now, a median income is the average between what the richest and the poorest is making. And so you take the total amount of money and you divide it up between 250 million people, and you actually, I guess, you divide it into the workforce, and you figure out that $37,000 or so is what people are making. But that's not the required need of America. Inflation has created such a situation that it's required to be considered middle class. You have to be making probably about $95,000 per year now.
Yeah, actually, this article, which we're straying a bit from Matrix and Food Not Bombs, but the claim of Diana Irwin in this column from the Sentinel is that in 1993, median family income was $36,959 a year, $2,737 lower than in 1989. While corporate profits soared, the nation's 500 largest companies cut more than 3 million jobs in the preceding 10 years. So in essence, she's describing the family, how this woman is returning to work just when her high school son needs her the most, and she'll earn $4 an hour less than when she left 10 years ago in the workforce. But I don't want to discuss that because I got other things I got to get into. And I want to thank you, David. I want you to conclude with anything you want to say, because I have another mystery and an unexpected guest showing up in the studio.
Yeah, I just appreciate the support radio, these private little radio stations have. I urge you, the listeners, to consider starting up a station of your own. These have a lot of different opportunities. When you realize that the corporate takeovers have occurred in such an immense scale, I have no respect for Bill Clinton any more than I have respect for the standard Republican of today. Bill Clinton has been allowing corporate takeovers to happen on such a large scale. The large communications takeovers are going to do nothing but limit the amount of free speech in America, and it's going to be doing it on a budget. They're going to use fake numbers to tell you that you don't have the right to live. So again, Robert, I appreciate your letting me on the station today, and we'll keep you informed about events in the future.
Hey, thank you. That was David Grace, Food Not Bomber from San Francisco, political challenger up there. He's run for office, and he's also run from office as well, I suppose. I'm hoping I can use him as a courier to send some tapes up to Liberation Radio in San Francisco. Maybe you'll contact me later on that one. David, thanks again. You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, as if you didn't know. We are the underground station in Santa Cruz, or certainly one of them. Maybe there are more. As David said, there should be more. This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. I'm Bathrobes Pierre, Robert Norse. And this is a show that happens every Monday and Friday from 10 to 12 or 1, thereabouts. We talk about issues of civil liberties and the poor. We talk about issues of civil liberties and the young. We talk about issues of civil liberties, generally. And that's what's been happening here. We've been discussing Matrix 2 in San Francisco. We will have you be calling in, I hope, once our phone lines get connected again. They were connected for a while, and they have been disconnected. But if you want to give a call to comment on the show, and I repeat, you can do that. Give me a call at 423-4833, and you'll be able to talk right now to an answering machine. Leave your message, and we'll put that message on the air if you'd like. We'll give you an opportunity to go on the air. We'll give you, even if you're a virulent critic and a ditto head, hey, we will invite you on the air to ditto it up and to give a Gush Dumbo's view of the homeless situation. So give a call, 423-4833. So now our next guest. Well, Shane Sheldon is our next guest. Shane, you're a guy who's lived in Santa Cruz on and off for the last decade, can we say?
About that, yeah.
Come closer to the mic. You have to actually be this close to be heard, unfortunately, or you have to talk very loudly, one of the two. You've been young on the streets of Santa Cruz. You've been poor on the streets of Santa Cruz. Your mom, Patrice, was a worker for the rights of poor people with the Welfare Parents Support Group, who died about 5 years ago. You and your brothers have been struggling in your own lives to do what you need to do. What I'm interested in, and what I'm going to be kind of focusing on, or one of the focuses of this show, and will continue to focus, is the curfew, the laws against the young, facilities young people need in Santa Cruz, how people are treated by the police and authorities if they are young. You're still young, but you're not under 18 anymore, of course, but you have been, and not so long ago. What's the situation for young people in Santa Cruz? What's the major problems a young person faces on the streets here in Santa Cruz?
The major problems with the young people... being bored, basically, I think.
Being bored.
I think they're bored. You know, as you know, downtown Santa Cruz has a cafe. And that's I don't know, pretty much the only real place to hang out other than coffee shops, which are pretty restricted in what you can do. I mean, you know, you can't... Kids like to skateboard, you know, they like to build skateboards and ride them all around and things like that. And, you know, as soon as something like that happens, it seems like, you know, the police tend to... you know, ban it, you know, get him off the mall. I had a friend who was walking his dog yesterday, for instance, and the police harassed him for it. And he said that the sign says no dogs allowed on the mall. And the dog, or no dogs on the sidewalk, that's right, excuse me, I apologize. No dogs on the sidewalk. Well, the dog wasn't in the sidewalk. The dog was off the sidewalk on the curb on a leash. And I don't understand how people are supposed to come down to the mall and hang out when, you know, they're really not allowed to, you know. I mean, it's just kind of weird. I don't know. I've gotten a lot of harassment from police, too, for things that I've done down there. I was running a ham radio for a while down there, and it was messing with the ScrewsNet internet site, and coming into some people's telephones and things like that. And even after I had stopped transmitting, I was still getting complaints, which I thought was kind of funny. Downtown hosts would come down and constantly harass me about my interference, even though I wasn't, you know, broadcasting anything or transmitting anything or messing with any kind of transmitters. And I thought that was kind of funny. And I think that anytime you get on the air and start doing something, they're gonna harass you for it, whether you're on it or off it. So. I don't know. Any other questions? I'm radio shy.
Give me about 2 minutes. We actually, we're turning into Organization Central here, Shane. One of our happy host watchers has just arrived. She's going to be on the Hound Dog the Host's table, which we're setting up in front of the, near the Del Mar Theater, in front of the Host's Informant Center down on Pacific and Lincoln today. So you're actually invited to join and help out with the table. Brett, you want to sign in on this? You want to talk on the air about what you're going to be doing down there at the table today?
What I'm going to be doing at the table is passing out a bunch of information about what the hosts represent in our town and basically how fucked they are. So please come and pick up some information at the table, because it's really in all of our best interests to know our rights and how they're abusing it. And just, we don't need them, and I'd like you all to understand what they're there for, really. So,
cool. That's our anonymous but vigilant host watcher who's going to be watching hosts. You can watch hosts with her if you'd like. That's today, probably starting in about half an hour.
Yeah.
Right. We have to. Yeah, we have to get you the table. This is Leslie speaking. Leslie says hi to all your, to all her fans out there. Go ahead, say hi, Leslie.
What you want?
There you go. What we're going to do now, in order to give me a break, is I'm going to put on the final version of a tape that you've been listening to in past sections of my Bathroom Spears broadsides. It is an interview with a Santa Barbara host, and down there they call them the greeters, I believe. No, they call them the hosts. I think they're the hosts. The greeters are in Berkeley. No, actually, it's the, who knows? I always get this confused, and I go through the same number every show. It's a similar program, but as I've told you guys in the past, you folks listening, you men and women, the guides are actually the people in Berkeley. And they are a group of, who walk around in little costumes, supposedly for the benefit of making it a friendlier downtown. In Santa Barbara, a community about 250 miles to the south, much wealthier community than Santa Cruz, they have no downtown ordinances like those in Santa Cruz. Hence, it is still legal to sit down next to a shop. It is still legal to ask for a dime after dark. Here in Santa Cruz, you try that, you can get a $168 ticket. You can do it. You do it twice, you can go to jail for up to 6 months. I mean, these are the realities that are behind the smile of the grinning green goblin hosts that we have here in Santa Cruz. But in Santa Barbara, it's a somewhat different situation. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to play the last part of an interview with a host down there who talks about her life and what she does. And you might find this interesting. I found it quite interesting. She's the most articulate woman. She really feels she's helping people, as I suppose hosts up here do too. And don't leave yet. And I'm going to give you this opportunity to hear this tape, and then we'll get back to you with more updates, more information, and more exciting news and views.
Big dollar kind of an arrival. So you have a whole upscale group of clientele that are coming from all over, from north and south, to shop in Santa Barbara. And it wasn't the simple little downtown stroll. Now you have these major alcoves, like the one we're in now, where people developed some businesses, and they wanted to pull people into these areas. But people were holding onto their money. People weren't coming to town as much. We're one of the few towns whose tourism rate has stayed the same, if not gone up, during this recession. Most towns have really been hit hard. And
what's unemployment look like compared with a decade ago? I mean, you yourself are working, what, 3 or 4 jobs? And your friends, I presume, may have been in similar circumstances, or are you unusual in that respect?
If you're single, it's not unusual at all. If you're single, there are 2 jobs is very common. And some of my jobs had to do more with my long-term goal of getting licensing hours, but most of the people in our town are not making good money, and we're all budgeting, and many of us are going month to month, and the rent is really high, and if you are choosing to live in your own apartment, a lot of your money, probably 75% of your money, goes just to rent and subsistence, and it's a hard town to make it in.
How about social services? What's happening with social services for the poor in Santa Barbara?
I'm not exactly sure what changes that have gone on, and one of our biggest problems is that we have a rising population of the Hispanic community, and a lot of children generated from this influx of families from Mexico. And our school system is just bulging. Our school system has got a 65% to 70% Hispanic population that's putting a real burden on our educational system. Number one, that most of our teachers don't speak Spanish, and number two, they have no idea about the cross-cultural experience that's going on for these families in transition. And we're having a wake-up call in Santa Barbara. It's not this level of the world. All is not well in paradise. I mean, things are, and there are a lot of families who are really struggling. And more women are in cars. More and more women have their children in cars.
Living in vehicles.
Living in vehicles, right. Displaced. We do have a shelter services for women. We do have a couple transitional living situations. The big word that I understand, and I don't know if it's true, is that many people don't like their rights infringed upon. They don't like being told when they can come and go, and they'd rather be on the street or in the parks or wherever they can be, rather than having to abide by someone else's rules for bed.
Also, there's concern about at least people in Golden Gate Park and today's Chronicle, who were cleared out yesterday in San Francisco. Some of them speak of the hotel hells that the mayor and some of the social service people want to put them into are often sort of loaded with drug abusers and violent people. That's the concern in San Francisco.
I don't know how safe it is on the streets as a homeless person either. I mean, I don't know.
If you're in a hotel, you're stuck in that particular place. In other words, in San Francisco, they passed a bill recently which you either have to accept some kind of hotel voucher, or they will take 98% of your GA check or something.
One of the, you mentioned checks. I think one of the issues that seems to come up around in Santa Barbara is around the use of substances, whether drugs, alcohol, or anything in between. And that an individual who's clean thinking and without drugs in their system are really cool and wonderful, but on those days when they party, their judgment goes, and they're really difficult behavioral to handle. They will say things and behave in a way that is very, very infringeable upon the rights of others around them, and that behavior reinforces a negative perspective of the homeless people. And we have a lot of partying homeless people in Santa Barbara, and it's a cool town to party in, but when the city's watching you and really watching you closely, it reinforces a negative perception of that population. And so I think sympathy goes out the window when we see one event, one situation when someone is downtown or at the beach and having to be confronted, and as opposed to just having them, you know, be quiet and calm. And if you want to drink, you can drink quietly.
Do you anticipate you'll be doing this in a year?
I don't know. It's a high-profile job. I meet a lot of people. I talk to a lot of people, and I'm in touch more with what's going on in Santa Barbara. I sit on a couple of committees in town that deal with alcohol, community alcohol prevention program.
You had an alcohol problem yourself in the past?
No. I grew up in an alcoholic home.
Didn't have a problem with you? You didn't have a problem with it?
No. Alcohol. It's just
been
something.
Homeless yourself?
Yes.
For how long?
I have. Well, I lived with my mother in a tent for about 4 months when I was about 8 or 9.
Santa Barbara.
No, in San Luis County. Uh-huh. And we received no help. And I've lived in Texas and in Salvation Army, living with a lot of very bizarre people when the services of the military didn't provide help for my mother, who was being battered and terrorized by an alcoholic father. And I know what it's like to be displaced. I know what it's like to have no money. I also know what it's like to see someone who hides behind the bottle and isn't wanting to have any assistance from anyone. And I also know people who have been in distress, who are willing to work and willing to make changes, but don't have any support and see no options. I mean, I know all is true. There's no one stereotypical view of who's on the streets and who's down and out. You can't be so ignorant to make such a blanketed statement like that.
And there you have it, Santa Cruz. Santa Barbara is speaking about how it's, well, certainly one person in Santa Barbara who's working on the streets as a host in a program that may be somewhat different than the Santa Cruz host program. What do you think? And you are back with Free Radio Santa Cruz. You have been listening to an interview with a Santa Barbara host, a woman who works for a hospitality program down in Santa Barbara, which essentially is concerned with prettying up the environment, but they don't have the anti-homeless laws down there that they have up here, and so the hosts are often reduced to mere threats. So, for instance, when I spoke initially to, when I met this woman, who is the host who agreed to be on the on tape and whom you just heard, she was talking with a jewelry person, a woman selling jewelry on the sidewalk, and advising her that, oh, you have to move along or else and you'll be given a ticket by a merchant and so forth, or selling jewelry. And I then kind of drew the jewelry person aside and said, you know, what are you going to do? And she said, well, this always happens. The hosts come along and threaten me, and then I ignore them, and the police come, and they ignore me. So police are not interested in ticketing me for selling jewelry. They're trying to get me to move based on threats. And again, I think this is one of the motivations of the host program. They don't want to pay police overtime. They don't want to deal with lawsuits. They just want to essentially intimidate everybody into leaving by threats. And as you can see, they sometimes go beyond threats. Actually, in the case of Phil Free earlier today, the musician who faces a disturbing the peace charge, which is a misdemeanor, actually has been getting criminal charges filed. And there were, as you may remember if you've heard this show, 7 sitting tickets given in the last 2 weeks. That's sit near a shop, get a ticket, do it twice, go to jail. And that's, in this case, near an abandoned shop or a shop that's currently vacant, the Kellymore Paints. At least 7 people in the last 2 weeks have gotten tickets that I have personally heard about. So the hosts are on the move, on the prowl, and we are prowling after them. We want to make sure that people are informed of their real rights. We want to make sure that those who are abused by the hosts have some recourse. We want to eliminate the host program, frankly, or at least see it turned into a real, true mediation program where these people are independent and are really concerned with buffering and depolarizing and assuring everyone of their rights downtown. Merchant, resident, tourist, and street person alike. That's what, at least that's what my goal is. I see some motions from our lingering guest, Shane, here in the studio. Did you want to say something on any of this, Shane?
Yeah.
Get close to the mic.
I was downtown hanging out once. There was a couple of people sitting down there against the pole, not exactly in front of a shop, but you could just call it that. And one of the downtown hosts walks up, and I had been sitting there for 2.5 hours already in my car, you know, playing with my stereo and, you know, trying to design something. But this guy comes up, this downtown host comes up and said, "You're panhandling." And the guy goes, "No, I'm not. I'm not panhandling. I'm just sitting here waiting for my ride." And the downtown host goes, "No, I saw you panhandling." And I had got out of my car and talked to the downtown host and said, "He wasn't panhandling. I've been watching him because I've been here for 2.5 hours. And the downtown host goes, got real mean with me and goes, "You better watch your back, you know, who are you anyway?" And I'm well, somebody you don't want to piss off. Somebody you don't want to piss off, you know. And so then he goes to the lady inside the Dat and Dodge place, and she starts throwing a big old fit and all this kind of stuff. And so it's a big mess down there with those downtown host people. I don't like them at all.
Well, I think that's really a relevant experience. And I'm hoping that if that kind of thing happens we can actually start to keep a record of abusive conduct that occurs on the parts of the host, and frankly, find some alternative. For instance, this story on Friday, when I had set up a table, and actually John Stewart was working on the table, Madhouse John, doing good work, and apparently Phil Free played a couple of songs, including Hospitality Nazis, which I will play for you shortly, by the way, so stay tuned. And then he was accused of disturbing the peace by, apparently by Ali of Alibaba's kiosk. That's my information anyway. And instead of having this issue resolved by mediation, which really should be done, Phil was willing to talk to Ali, but Ali did not want to talk to Phil. I spoke to both of them and tried to get them to get together. So, but the at latest post, at latest word, as you've heard earlier in the show, Ali has agreed to talk to Phil through a mediator, and hopefully that's what we really need on the mall, is mediation. Mediation, not the kind of enforcement by edict, the kind of merchant monopolization of the mall that is seems to be the watchword now. Now you might say, hey, there are lots of musicians on the mall, I see them every day, I have lots of people sitting down in the mall, they're not being hassled. Well, you may see that, and that is true. There's not, the mall has not yet been swept clean of those activities, but those activities take place at a cost and at a risk. There are continuing hassles by the hosts that are happening, not simply on the basis of merchant complaints. These guys independently walk around and harass people based upon, well, you can say, the law. Well, you know, there's some truth to that, although I've also heard them harassing people outside the law. For instance, you can legally sit near a fence. You can legally sit on the curb. You can legally sit in certain other spaces. And I've heard of people being harassed in legal places to sit. The hosts, the very idea of having a bunch of people walking around creating trouble, in essence, is to me really kind of ridiculous and doesn't suit the merchants at all. It's based upon this kind of merchant omnipotence theory that somehow, and I heard this yesterday, or actually on Friday from Ali, he didn't want to talk to musician Phil Free because he felt that he didn't need to. The police would take care of everything. I mean, this is an unfortunate fantasy that many merchants have. Now, I do recommend calling the police in certain circumstances when you feel you're being threatened, when you have a genuine problem that requires some kind of a complaint. But obviously, a better solution in these somewhat gray areas where we're all trying to use the public spaces is to try talking to real people, to try conversation that would preclude a confrontation, that would resolve the different interests here. You know, I mean, like with Phil Free on the mall, I suggested that Phil play for an hour and then Ali do his boombox for an hour. That was the concern, that the two of them together had too much music going at the same time. And I'm hoping that will be the ultimate resolution of that problem. But instead, Ali has filed a disturbing the peace complaint. Phil's going to have to go to court. The whole thing gets very messy and costly and stupid. And we don't need that in Santa Cruz. I hope we don't have that in the future. But if you want to see that kind of thing happening in action, come on down to the Hound Dog the Host's table, which is going to be on the mall today. After this show is over, probably starting about 1:15, I've kind of kicked it ahead to there, and that'll be right in front of the Downtown Informant Center, or as they call it, the Downtown Information Center, Host HQ, next to the Del Mar Theater. What I'm going to do now, to give me a chance to take a poo-poo break, as we call it on the air, 10-100, is that what it is? Is play you Hospitality Nazis, the song, the famous song for which Phil is getting lots of flack. That's Phil Free, or Full Heart Phil, as I call him. I will not call him Foaming Phil, because that would make him mad, so I won't do that, Phil. He's not foaming, he's quite articulate, but he can raise his voice, I will say that for him. So here's Hospitality Nazis, and